to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. Gordon Chang, our duty expert on Asia and that of, well, so many others, Fox News, Forbes.com, WorldAffairsJournal.com. Gordon of two important books, Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World, and The Coming Collapse of China. He is a man we visit with each week here for an assessment of what's happening in Asia and what it might mean for us. Always welcome. Good to have you, Gordon.
Thanks so much, Frank.
Well, the president is in India as we speak and being feted, a lot of security, but the strategic implications of this visit are what I know matters most. Talk about those, if you would.
This is President Obama's second trip to India. This trip is rich in symbolism. This is the first time a sitting American leader has gone to India twice, and it is also the first time that the Indians have invited an American president to their Republic Day ceremonies. And had it not been for the death of King Abdullah and President Obama's trip to Saudi Arabia at the tail end of this India trip, this would have been the first time in recent memory that an American leader has made a long-distance solo trip to just one destination. They're not going to be very much in the way of agreements. There is some talk of progress on the nuclear deal. But nonetheless, this is important because this is the world's most powerful democracy and its most populous one getting together.
The nuclear deal of which you speak is, of course, one involving civilian nuclear power reactors being sold from the United States to India. Is that right?
That's right. There's been the issue of liability. This is the hangover from President Bush's agreement with India, which I think is his most positive foreign policy legacy. Generations will remember what President Bush started and what President Obama has continued. Right now, what we're seeing is that an aggressive China is pushing both Washington and New Delhi closer together, and this is one of the most positive developments in the world.
And to the extent that those relationships that have been built, those openings, if you will, have been established, where do you expect this to go, Gordon, in terms of the relationship? Commercial reactors perhaps being one piece of it, trade, I'm certain, being another piece of it, but what else is likely to emerge, particularly of a strategic character, vis-a-vis, as you say, the increasing aggressiveness of China?
The most important thing here is that New Delhi is getting closer to American allies such as Japan, and also it is establishing a firm friendship with Vietnam, which Washington is also courting. So what we're having is really a knitting together of like-minded states around the periphery of China as all of these countries react to increasing belligerence from Beijing. And that is the most important strategic narrative here. We are going to see close cooperation, maybe not alliances, but at least close cooperation among New Delhi, Hanoi, Manila, South Korea, Japan, the United States. This is all going to be working together as countries realize they've got common interests.
We will be watching it closely, as will you. Gordon Chang is our guest. He is a columnist for Forbes.com. He blogs at WorldAffairsJournal.com. And, of course, you see him frequently at Fox News. And, Gordon, the other piece of this that I wanted to cover with you, we touched on in our conversation a moment ago with Bill Gertz, is North Korea and its activities at the moment. War games are apparently being, you know, conducted at the planning stage at Special Operations Command as we speak for dealing with an increasingly capable and aggressive North Korea. You've written recently about what the North Koreans are up to and also their changing relationship with their chief historic sponsor, namely Communist China. What's up with all that?
Chinese-North Korean relations are at a low point right now. Part of it is because Jun Song-tak, who is the leader's uncle, was executed in December 2013. And Jun Song-tak was really the primary link between China and North Korea. And with him gone and with the elimination of his patronage network, with all of these executions that we've seen recently, it really means that North Korea deliberately cut ties to the Chinese. While this is happening, though, we're seeing Moscow and Pyongyang get very much closer together. And people have said that Kim Jong-un has accepted Vladimir Putin's invitation to go to Moscow in May to celebrate the 70th anniversary of Russia's victory over Nazi Germany. And if that is indeed the case, that if Kim does indeed travel to Moscow, we could see a scrambling of relations. This is occurring while all sorts of things are happening from the diplomacy-wise on the Korean Peninsula. It's going to be a very different place a year from now.
Talk about the Russian angle as well, Gordon. The North Koreans presumably have not only a certain strategic value to the Russians as they are positioning in the region, but also this play with respect to a pipeline for their natural gas to South Korea. How important is that, and is that already something that's been nailed down, or do you anticipate that's a coming attraction?
Yeah, this is a coming attraction. Russia wants to sell natural gas to the South Koreans, and the only practical way to do that is through a pipeline. To get to South Korea, you have to have the pipeline travel through North Korea. So obviously, Moscow needs Pyongyang's cooperation. This is important because Western European customers are starting to turn away from the Russians because of the sanctions over Ukraine, where events are getting much worse as we speak. And so Russia needs to diversify away from Europe, and the way to do that is Asia. He's selling more, of course, to the Chinese, but he, of course, would like an additional customer in the South Koreans, who probably will be one of his best customers in the years ahead if he can, in fact, arrange this pipeline.
It'll be fascinating to see, and particularly the dynamic between North Korea and China, as the two presumably depend upon each other, or at least the North Koreans depend heavily on the Chinese, even as this obvious strain is taking place in their relationship. You will be following it closely, Gordon, as I can assure you will we, and we look forward to talking with you about it early and often. Let me talk about something else that we discussed as it was unfolding, Gordon, on our last visit, Sri Lanka. And tell us more about how Sri Lanka fits into a larger Chinese aspiration for the Indian Ocean.
Beijing would like to dominate the Indian Ocean. They have what's called the Maritime Silk Road, which would connect ports on China to basically Africa, the Middle East, and of course then Europe. To do that, they've got to go through India's backyard. And to do that, they've been establishing relations with countries like Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, the Maldives. And they poured a lot of money into Sri Lanka. They've tried to affect politics there. But recently, the Sri Lankans turned out the pro-Beijing government, and now the country is up for grabs. The new government, of course, has to maintain relations with China, but nonetheless, it is trying to balance its ties by having a closer relations with New Delhi. This is going to be important because Sri Lanka is only 40 miles off of India's coast.
And to the extent that the Chinese were unable to essentially assure the future tenure of a pro-Chinese puppet, maybe too strong a word, but certainly someone aligned with the Chinese in Sri Lanka, do you think that that is likely to mean an ebbing of China's influence, not just in that country, but elsewhere in the region as well?
Well, clearly, China will lose influence in Sri Lanka in the years ahead. Beijing will work very hard to regain what it's lost. But what we have seen, though, in recent months is really a number of setbacks for China, especially with the November 29 elections in Taiwan. Clearly, the Burmese regime is moving much closer to the West. This is a part of a general trend that we're seeing on the periphery of China. Beijing is going to be working overtime to try to reverse recent losses. But right now, they seem to be having a difficult time in Beijing keeping their friends.
Well, I feel their pain. It seems as though we're having some difficulty supporting ours, which may translate into having fewer of them as well. But we certainly are watching the Obama administration embrace a lot of enemies. This is what makes this business so interesting, as does having the chance to visit with you about it from time to time. Gordon, thank you very much for joining us here at Secure Freedom Radio. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week. We'll look forward to talking to the rest of you tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.